heard on great radio stations all across America. It's The National Defense with Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry.
This is The National Defense. Randy Miller along with Jerry Newberry, Communications Director for the VFW. And as always, Jerry, our dedication.
Hey, this show's for you, the men and women serving on active duty, the Guard and Reserves, to the millions of veterans out there, and, of course, all your families. We love you. We're here for you. God bless you all.
You know, I was just talking to one of our affiliates yesterday, and the guy asked me the question, you know, you guys do the show for the veterans and the active duty folks. Do you ever hear from them directly? Well, yeah, all the time. In fact, today, right. We're going to be talking to somebody directly from Iraq, and this is our Army show today.
That's right.
You know, once a month, we do a special show just for the U.S. Army. It's Voices of Strength, an hour with America's Army, and we're going to be talking to Colonel Bill Buckner. You had a great interview with him.
Yeah, he's a good guy, and yeah, I noticed that you sat there and didn't interrupt.
I was absolutely enthralled.
Because once you saw the airborne badges and Ranger tabs and all that,
that's right.
You knew better than to butt in.
I step away.
That's right.
Step away.
And we appreciate it because I didn't want to spill any blood in the studio. So, well, no, seriously, Colonel Buckner's a good guy. He's going to tell us. He's going to explain some things to us, give us some details and what's
directly
going on.
From Iraq. I mean, he's on the ground.
Right.
So
he is.
You know, that answers another question about the program because you know, a lot of people do wonder if this is the first time or second time they've heard the show. Do you talk to folks that are in combat? Absolutely, all the time. We talk to the people in charge. We talk to the people on the ground, and then you yourself have made several trips to Iraq and Afghanistan. So look forward to maybe some more of that happening in the next year, too.
So, I hope so.
A lot of stuff. We got a lot of stuff, a lot of hot topics to cover. We got it all for you this hour right here on The National Defense.
The only truth you'll hear on the radio, The National Defense.
The VFW is looking for a few more heroes. The largest combat veterans organization in America wants to get you involved and keep you active. With nearly 2 million members and 9,000 posts around the country, the VFW is doing the tough job of supporting our troops. You can be a part of all the excellent programs that keep the fires burning on the front lines. Programs such as Operation Uplink, with phone cards for active duty and hospitalized veterans, Adopt a Unit, which provides assistance for nearly 1,000 military units, and care package efforts for the troops serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. Only someone who's been there can understand what it means to be remembered. The VFW has been the heart and soul of the military for over 100 years. Isn't it time you stake your claim as a veteran? Call the VFW Membership Department at 1-888-JOIN-VFW or log on to VFW.org for more details. You've served your country. Now you can help your country serve others. Call 1-888-JOIN-VFW. That's 1-888-JOIN-VFW.
Big Brothers Big Sisters presents 100 Years of Helping Kids.
Today, Kyle and his big brother, Justin,
hello.
Hi.
Are here to share some stuff we've learned.
With kids, it's not always what you say, but how you say it.
Hey, Kyle, you want to go to a foreign film festival?
Nah, that's boring.
Okay.
Hey, Kyle, you want to go to a foreign film festival?
Yeah, that's a great idea.
From time to time, a kid may double dare you.
Wow, that looks heavy. Bet you can't lift it.
Are you serious?
I double dare you.
Okay.
See? I told you! Uh-oh.
Moments like these happen every day.
Making a big difference in the life of a child. To find out the many ways you can help support kids in your community, call 1-888-412-BIGS or go to BigBrothersBigSisters.org.
That's BigBrothersBigSisters.org.
This message brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
Until next time.
Hey, I'm Jerry Newberry. You're listening to The National Defense. And, you know, like we always try and do, we try and bring you news from theater, from Iraq, from Afghanistan. And, of course, we have our monthly Army program. And today that's part of it. And we're lucky enough to have a live call from Iraq. And this guy, let me tell you a little bit about him. You know how I am about the airborne stuff. This colonel Colonel Buckner, who's on the phone with us, I would dare say has jumped out of more than a couple of airplanes. He's a master parachutist. He's got the air assault badge, Ranger tab. He has the German and Australian parachutist badges. He served with numerous light infantry units, and of course he served with 101st. I have to mention that, and also, as a lot of you know, when I embedded in Afghanistan, 132 infantry. So he's been with them and a lot of other units. Colonel Bill Buckner, how are you?
Hey, Jerry. Very, very good. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today, and hopefully provide you with some pretty good insights into what's going on today and how we're continuing to make progress here in country.
Yeah, you sure are. By everything we've been hearing in the news, for so long it was all gloom and doom, and things are really starting to turn around right now. Of course, the Iraqi forces are taking over, and I understand there's been a change in the way operations are performed. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, what you're referring to is the Strategic Framework Agreement and the Security Agreement. This was a document that was ratified by the government of Iraq here last week. And essentially what it does is it really respects and honors the sovereignty of the country of Iraq and obviously the United States as well. But what it does is it essentially says that by December of 2011 that coalition forces will depart the country with the exception of those that may be asked to stay by the Iraqi government. And then on top of that, this summer, June of 2009, we have to be out of the cities and to begin to turn over some of the property back to the Iraqi government. On top of all of that, come 1 January, we can no longer conduct sort of unilateral operations. We have to conduct operations where they are combined joint operations, and we have to ask the Iraqi security forces and the government to be able to participate in those operations before we execute. So in many respects, the way in which we do business will change a little bit, but our mission still remains the same, and that is to protect the Iraqi populace, to help develop the Iraqi security forces, and to continue to help extend essential services to the Iraqi people.
And let's talk about the security forces for a while. There's been some news, of course. We don't get a lot of the positive stuff back here, to be honest with you. The fact of the matter is most of the provinces, unless I'm mistaken, have been more or less turned over to Iraqi security forces. Is that correct?
That is correct. 13 of the 18 provinces have been picked, meaning that they've been turned over to Iraqi control, and their security forces are operating in those particular areas. So when you take a look at that in concert with this security agreement, we really we're not really changing a whole lot in the way in which we conduct business, because we've been doing and performing sort of this combined approach to our operations for some time now. The Iraqi security forces, I had the benefit of being in Iraq in 2005 as well, and it was a period of time where the Iraqi security forces were really standing up, and we had about 150, maybe 200,000 Iraqi security forces. Today, we have over 600,000. That's police, national police, and Iraqi army. So they have made tremendous strides in terms of their progress, their capability, their capacity to conduct operations. And so I think all of us here, to include General Austin, feels very optimistic about the direction that we are headed in at this point.
And let's talk about the caliber of those security forces. I've heard some discussion, well, yeah, they're turning it over to Iraqi security forces, but, they're kind of lame. And I've disagreed vehemently about that because I know who's been training them. Can you talk about the caliber of the quality of the training they received and the quality of the security forces?
Yeah, I think that what you'll see is, you know, in some cases that the performance of the units or the individual soldiers, police, is uneven at times. Depends on the province and where they're at in their training. In some cases, it's about leadership. But across the board, the Iraq Security Forces have made a tremendous amount of progress. One of the areas that we use to help them in that process is conducting basically a warfighter training program, very similar to what we have at, in the States for our training before we deploy on major, you know, operations, where we go through what we call a CTC, our combined training facilities and centers. And we have a similar process here where we try to develop the Iraqi security forces at the battalion level down to company level, and they teach them a lot of their basic skills, their tactics, and try to develop them to a point that they are able to elevate to the next level. Where we see that sort of manifest itself is in the ability of the Iraq security forces to conduct their operations on a day-to-day basis. You know, if you recall back in March time period, we had some significant operations that were occurring in the Basra area, south, the southern portion of Iraq. And for the first time, we were actually able to deploy in an expeditionary manner Iraqi security forces from Al Anbar, the western part of the country, all the way down to Basra. And they, you know, they did a pretty decent job. There was some stop and go. There were some challenges that we already knew that existed. But for the most part, that was really the first time that we saw them take on more of a nationalistic approach to securing their nation. And so what that did was kick off a series of other operations up into Baghdad, Sadr City, Mosul, Amara, and throughout the country. And so what we're seeing now is, you know, a professional force, and that's what part of our responsibility is to do, is to help to professionalize the Iraq security forces to a point that they can provide for their own security of the, across the country, and to be able to deal with an insurgency in Iraq.
We're speaking with Colonel Bill Buckner. He's a PAO, 18th Airborne, Multinational Forces Iraq. Colonel Buckner, of course, all that's part of the strategic framework, the security agreement, the Iraqi security forces. Part of that strategic framework includes the Sons of Iraq. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, the Sons of Iraq, as you recall, was really started back in April of 2007. It was pretty much called the Awakening. And this was out in the Al Anbar with the Marines that were out in that area. And they really reached out to these tribal leaders and these young men who really were disenfranchised. They you know, really had enough of attacks by AQI and decided to join forces with the coalition and with the Iraqi government. Over time, that has continued to develop to the point that we have or had almost 100,000 young men that were helping to defend their country. And I will tell you that I just came back from Adamiya, which is in the in Baghdad today on a battlefield circulation, and we got a chance to meet with the 11th Iraqi Army Division commander. And he had nothing but praises to say about the Sons of Iraq. They have really thickened the force. They have allowed us to maintain a level of security. And they have a, you know, a capability and skill because of the culturally, they speak the language, they understand, they live in these communities. And so they're able to really identify some things that we as, you know, as Americans probably could not, or as coalition could not identify very easily. And they're able to do that. And then they go out and they provide information in terms of tips, finding caches. They also are helping provide security in their local communities. And so we started out with, we've got about 100,000. And now what we're doing is we're in the process now of transferring those Sons of Iraq to Iraqi control, meaning that they pick up the payments for the soldiers. We've already started that process back in October with about 47 to 50,000 or so in Baghdad. That transfer has successfully been completed, and now the Iraqis or the government is getting ready to start its second payday for the Sons of Iraq in Baghdad. What we're doing now is continuing that process in Qadisiyah, Wasit, and Babil provinces in the southern part of Iraq. We're going through the registration process now, and in Diala, we're going through the registration process as well. So it has been a tremendous resource, and what we're trying to do is honor the commitment to the Sons of Iraq, who stepped up at some very, very difficult times and took the fight to Al-Qaeda.
So to put it in plain English, these are simply men who got tired of the insurgents, the bad guys, coming into their neighborhoods and killing their neighbors, essentially, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that is really, really that in a nutshell. And that what they got tired of was, you know, AQI is really pretty ruthless. They have no hesitation about indiscriminate killing of innocent Iraqi citizens or women or children. And in fact, today at about 2 o'clock here in Iraq, in Kirkuk, which is up in the northern part of Iraq, we had a suicide bomber that attacked a restaurant. And you'll hear about this, obviously, but there were about 55 or 60 or so civilians that were killed, and then another 100 or so that were wounded. And that just happened today. And so that is the cycle that you see coming out of AQI, and that's why the people here really are rejecting, you know, that behavior and that type of activity, because they don't want it. And so the Sons of Iraq have helped us to stem some of that. And I think that, you know, now what we're trying to do is the government of Iraq has said, we want to honor that commitment to you, and we are going to integrate you into part of our security forces. And those of you that don't become integrated will go into other job creation, sort of job programs like VOTEC and training apprentices to learn how to do some other skills and to contribute from a sort of a long-term employment standpoint.
Yeah, there's been a lot of naysayers, as you know, through the years of our involvement in Iraq. A lot of naysayers who have said or questioned the Iraqi people's willingness to take control of their country, to take care of their neighborhoods, and I think that really helps answer that question. Because, like you said, here's a force of men who got fed up, tired of their neighbors being killed, tired of these people coming into their country, their neighborhoods, and causing so much harm. You know, part of the thing with these doom and gloom people, you know, they still question the ability for the Iraqi government to hold free, fair, and credible elections. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I was here in 2005, the last part of 2004, and then early part of 2005, and I got a chance to participate and to watch in the October 2005 referendum vote, and then a 2005. A national election. And so got a chance to watch that. And you recall all of the purple fingers. You might remember that.
Right.
That was a pretty historic period of time. But this provincial election that's getting ready to come up is even more important, because really what this does is it has the local, you know, populace, the people who are getting a chance to vote for their leaders in their provinces. And so they are, you know, actively running campaigns now. They're actively promoting the various candidates. You know, they're doing this very transparently on TV and in many, you know, open ways. And so this particular election that will come up, that will take place on the 31st of January, is really a pretty phenomenal event. And then what that does is it also sort of paves the way for national elections, which will occur later in the year. So the first election was important, but this one is probably doubly important, because it really, for the first time, allows the local, the average citizen, to vote for people that they want to lead their particular communities, their tribes, their provinces. And so it's going to be a pretty historic event. So I'm excited about it.
And with the elections, I think there's still a question. How about the Iraqi government, the parliament, for example? Obviously, at least to us, government is working. The security agreement speaks towards that, I think. But that isn't just one person who made that decision regarding the security agreement, right?
Right. They had the security agreement initially, and it's been a long process, I mean, because it is really taking a hard look at recognizing that Iraq is a sovereign country, and they, over time, will determine who stays in this country and what actions are taken within its country, outside its borders, and the influence within Iraq. And so there was a Council of Representatives, which is 279 folks or so, that had a chance to vote on the strategic agreement, and they overwhelmingly supported that. It then went to a presidential council, which is a number of folks, leaders here, the president, I think the prime minister. And so they then voted on it and ratified that particular document. And it was really important that they voted on it because they had a couple of options. They could have either have allowed it to run through sort of a 10-day period and it automatically would have become law, or they could have rejected it, or they could have voted. And the fact that they voted really was a big step because they publicly accepted and acknowledged that this is the direction that they wanted their country to move into. And so it was really, I was glad to hear that they actually voted on it and not allowed it to sort of just become law. And so it was really a pretty significant event.
Right. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, we've mentioned this and gone into detail so many times through the years about the accomplishment of our troops in Iraq, the building, assisting with rebuilding the infrastructure, hospitals, schools. And that still goes largely, we feel, unacknowledged in this country. I know our troops are still, you know, with the surge, so closely involved with communities. Give us some insight as to what our troops are still doing.
Well, I think that, you know, I had the benefit today, like I said earlier, of traveling up into Baghdad and went to the Adamiya sports complex. And this is a sports complex that's currently in the process of being built. It's being built through SERP funds and some other funding, but for the most part, what it does is it provides a sort of a return on normalcy for the local residents. And what this facility has is, you know, a soccer field, it has a boxing ring, it has wrestling, it has a basketball court. I mean, it would be just like any other sort of sports complex that you would see in the United States, and all of that is being done in conjunction with the, you know, that within the various communities, and the soldiers are helping in that process. And if you go throughout the country, you'll see the same sort of thing happening. We have lots of openings, ribbon-cutting ceremonies for various facilities, whether it's a legal building or whether it is a swimming pool. In Baghdad in particular, there are a number of swimming pools that have been opened up. And I this year, I got a chance to go into Baghdad and go to one of the swimming pools. And I tell you, if you were to close your eyes and somebody would spin you around in circles and you'd open up your eyes and you looked at that, you could be in any American swimming pool in the summertime.
Really?
You would not know the difference. I mean, it was incredible. And you go in there and you can't believe, you know, really your eyes are what you're seeing. Young kids, I mean, 10, 12, 13-year-olds and younger in the swimming pool playing, laughing. And outside the confines of that swimming pool, you know, you have, you know, security challenges that are taking place every day. And so I found it pretty amazing to be able to walk into a pool like that and see the kids playing. And like I said, if you were to close your eyes and someone were to spin you around in circles a couple times and you'd open up your eyes, you would think you were in the United States somewhere at a swimming pool during the middle of the summer. And so, but those projects just didn't happen. They happened because soldiers and leaders, you know, are making some very prudent decisions about spending money and what is it going to take to stimulate and to return sort of normalcy back to the community. And so today, again, I went up to a site, and it was incredible looking at it. And it was funny because we had a bunch of Iraqi generals that came to the complex, and they were showing that to General Austin and they were really bragging about the fact that they could, you know, host different events, and they were going to challenge the coalition to different sporting events. And one of the hosts that was leading that process was a former Olympian, Iraqi Olympian, who was actually coaching at this sports complex. And he was a silver medalist, I believe, in early 80s Olympics time period, and was also a bronze medalist. And he was taking us on a tour today. So, you know, people don't hear those kind of things and see that very often. But those are the type of things that are going on every day here in Iraq.
Right. You know, it's been a long, hard road, no doubt about that. Our troops have performed magnificently. They've sacrificed, and they've given so much. There is light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, we can see the light. Security agreement has been signed. They're holding free, fair, and most importantly, credible elections. People are taking control of their lives. Iraqi citizens are taking control of their lives, holding elections. You know, it's all because of our service people. And
you know, that's an interesting comment that you make there, because you know, as I think through, you know, our soldiers, and I get a chance to see them all the time, whether it's soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, our civilians that are over here as well, that are working very, very hard to help this country move forward. And you almost sort of think of, you know, there's a legacy here in Iraq that our soldiers are helping to establish. And, you know, they're helping to create a nation that is free to plan for its future, rather than a nation that is trying to survive from day to day. I think that our soldiers are helping the government, and to create a government, or help in the process of a government that continues to find its voice and to be able to stand up on its own in the international community. I think they're also helping to create a legacy in the fact that, you know, people here have rejected extremism. They've rejected Al-Qaeda in Iraq and that lifestyle, and they want something different. And I think that they also are helping and leaving a legacy in fact that they're creating a population that participates in determining its own leaders through various elections. And so there is, you know, we always talk about the greatest generation, and we just celebrated, obviously, Pearl Harbor and D-Day on the 7th of December, recognizing the greatest generation during that time period. But the young men and women that serve today are really our newest generation, greatest generation. And right. It's really been, as I get toward the sort of the end of my career, and I look out at some of these young officers and non-commissioned officers and soldiers and seeing what they're doing, I can't imagine being able to do some of the things that they do today when I was a young lieutenant. Our lieutenants and particularly our non-commissioned officers are doing things that are really levels and levels above the skills and the things that I was asked to do as a young officer. So I'm amazed every time I go out and see them.
Yeah, and you know, with the new Army doctrine, the decision-making process is left in the hands of NCOs and junior officers. And you spoke very eloquently. You couldn't have used a better word than legacy. You know, a lot of people don't understand it, don't appreciate it. They probably won't appreciate it. Some of our own people who have served in Iraq probably won't appreciate it or realize it, you know, maybe for some years to come. But they're going to look back, I believe, and the American people are going to look back. The entire world are going to look back on the accomplishments of what our service people, their sacrifice, and that legacy of freedom, you know, something that we enjoy and sometimes take for granted. Freedom for the Iraqi people. You know, I think one day the world will understand, and certainly will recognize this generation of service people as the greatest generation of the 21st century.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, the young men and women that are serving today, really, if you think about it, I mean, this battlefield and asymmetrical sort of battlefield here in Iraq is very, very complex. And, you know, the type of leaders that we have today have to be very adaptive in their thinking. You know, one day they are involved in a kinetic, you know, operation where they, you know, maybe have to capture or kill, you know, an enemy, an insurgent, extremist. And then they turn around, and just like you mentioned earlier, they are helping to build, you know, a new facility. They're helping to put something together. They're helping to extend a civil capacity. And so they have to do all of that, you know, on a recurring basis. Every day they are transitioning between, you know, a kinetic operation and being able to help civil capacity. They also, you know, are working, you know, their tactics. You know, they've got to really be pretty sharp in how they address their day-to-day sort of tactics, techniques, and procedures, because they're faced with threats that are just, in many cases, very difficult to defeat in many ways. But we're going after it pretty hard, and that's, you know, IEDs and suicide vests and using of women by AQI to go after really innocent Iraqi citizens, security forces. And it's interesting because what we see is that the AQI and special group criminals, as we call them, Shias, that are on the fringes, the extremists, are really going after the Sons of Iraq. And because they realize the value and the benefit that the Sons of Iraq offer to this country. And so they are actually deliberately targeting them on a pretty frequent basis. And so it's pretty interesting, you know, our soldiers are having to operate in that type of environment. Very complex, have to be very adaptive in their thinking, be able to balance, you know, sort of lethal and kinetic operations against sort of nation-building type of mindset. And it's a challenge. But they're doing a tremendous job at it. And again, every time I get a chance to travel around Iraq and look and talk to them, it's amazing the type of young men and women we have served today. And I'm really in awe of what they do each and every day.
Yeah, they're absolutely amazing. We've been speaking with Colonel Bill Buckner, 18th Airborne, PAO, Multinational Forces Iraq. Colonel Buckner, we've got to get going. Christmas is coming up, and as you travel around, please let our men and women know that there are a lot of us back here who think about them on a daily basis. We care about them. We love them. We'll be thinking about them and their families during the Christmas holiday. And just tell them, again, that we love them and we appreciate them.
Well, Jerry, I appreciate that, and I certainly will do that every opportunity I have. You know, being away from home during the holidays is always a tough challenge. You know, we just had our Thanksgiving holiday season or period, and you'd be amazed at, you know, folks like yourself and many others who are sending us care packages, phone cards, books, just unbelievable amounts of items over here to help the soldiers sort of you know, not have to worry about a lot of those things. And so we really do appreciate, you know, all of those letters that come from kids at schools and those sort of things. And I try to make a point that every time I get a letter, I try to write one back to the young kids and just thank them for their support. As we travel around the Christmas time period, is the commanding general, General Austin, and our command sergeant major, Sergeant Major Joe Allen, they make it a point to go around to a lot of the distant and remote locations that don't get a lot of visitors and go out and just shake soldiers' hands and recognize their contributions. And some of them are living in some very austere locations, but you don't hear them complaining. You don't hear them, you know, sniveling about anything. They are just, you know, doing what they need to do. And I think what you'll see is that the morale of these soldiers are pretty high, that they believe in what they're doing, and they want to finish the job. And that's what you see reflected and hear all the time when you talk to soldiers. So I appreciate all the prayers and thoughts for the holiday period, and I certainly will make sure that everyone I get a chance to talk to, I will share that with them and let them know that there are a lot of folks behind us and supporting them.
All right, and if you need anything, you got a pipeline back here through us. Just let us know, and we'll be there.
Well, I appreciate that.
All right. Thanks, Colonel.
Okay. Thank you, Jerry.
Colonel Buckner, good guy. And We just can't say enough about our troops, and we certainly need to think about them during this Christmas season because they're far away from home, and we're here enjoying things. So take a minute during the holidays to say a prayer for them, give them a thought. I'm Jerry Newberry. You're listening to the National Defense.
We're standing guard with the truth, the National Defense.
In a military warehouse south of Washington, D.C., a USO stuffing party is in full swing. By the end of the day, volunteers will have stuffed over 10,000 USO care packages, packed them in boxes, loaded them on trucks, and sent them on their way to our soldiers in Iraq, Afghanistan, and military bases around the world. They'll stuff them full of things that most of us take for granted, but that our troops don't often have. Things like toiletries, playing cards, candy, books, little things. Little things that carry an enormous message to our troops. Little things like thank you, like we'll never forget you, like we're behind you 100%, like we love and cherish each and every one of you. Little things. We're all about the little things. We're the USO. So are you. For more information and to find out how you can help, visit us at USO.org. The USO. Until everyone comes home.
Big Brothers Big Sisters presents 100 Years of Helping Kids.
With us today are Sally and her big sister Marcy.
Hi.
Hello. To share some stuff we've learned.
Kids and sugar, a combustible mix.
Hey Marcy, let's go to the zoo.
Maybe the park.
We could fly a kite.
I want a hot dog.
No,
ice cream.
Is that a horse?
I love horses.
Hey, let's dance.
Maybe that's enough chocolate.
And sing.
La la la, la 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 la.
It's also not uncommon for a kid to demonstrate special powers.
Did you know I can run through walls?
No.
Watch this.
Oh, Sally.
Don't worry. I also have amazing healing powers.
Moments like these happen every day.
Making a big difference in the life of a child. To find out the many ways you can help support kids in your community, call 1-888-412-BIGS or go to BigBrothersBigSisters.org.
That's BigBrothersBigSisters.org.
This message brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
That's all for now.
Welcome back to National Defense. Randy Miller along with Jerry Newberry. Yeah, that's just good stuff. That's great to hear from, directly from Iraq. And I think, the most important thing that I heard that Bill Buckner said was the morale of the troops. Very high.
Yeah, and that's been the amazing thing, Randy, through the years. We've been in Iraq a long time.
Yes.
And our troops, when you think about it, when they first deployed to Iraq, extended combat.
Right.
I mean, not a couple of firefights, and that was it. We're talking weeks of extended combat. My point is, what I'm trying to make here, is that through all the years, mm-hmm. through and there's been some really bad years.
Yeah.
In Iraq, through it all, our troops' morale has always been high. They've just been amazing. They always.
That's not true according to the evening news, Jerry. I mean, everybody's pissing and moaning and they're mad and they don't want to be there and stop loss and it's horrible. They don't want to go back. They don't care about it.
Yeah. Well, some of these yahoos sitting on their fat asses in New York
right,
or
exactly.
L.A. wherever. And, yeah. Some of them have made trips and but most of them when they did make the trips were. Sitting there in a green zone and taking her easy and, having her stringers go out.
Exactly. Make sure the makeup's good.
They might have gone out in the field for something other than a...
Other than a what?
A photo op.
Yeah.
Or a sound bite and spent some time with the troops. In some bad places, and then they would have been able to truly gauge their morale.
Well, let's get to some hot topics here. We got some hot topics that we need to talk about. And first of all, in honor of the Illinois governor, what I'd like to do is sell Jerry's seat today. The winning bid gets to sit in his seat and do the show. Just get to us at thenationaldefense.com. Tell us how much you pay for the seat. I think, Jerry, start off with any amount, but you've got...
And this seat doesn't come cheap,
let me tell you. That's what I'm talking about. This seat has never been auctioned off to anybody, but if the Illinois governor can do it, we can do it. Oh, man.
That's nice.
Is that a mess? That's
nice.
Is that incredible? Well, anyway, we got a lot of stuff to talk about. And again, every week something happens with General David Petraeus that makes me just respect the guy even more than the week before. He addressed a group of in Rome about NATO and the additional troops that are going to Afghanistan. And I just, you just love everything the guy says. More than 60,000 foreign troops in Afghanistan, just over half of whom are from the United States. And he's basically there telling them exactly the way it will be with the increase in troop participation, that over half would be from the United States. And I mean, the message is right there. That's half from the United States. Now, yeah. Come on.
So step up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I found it interesting when I was in Afghanistan. Now, I don't want to slam any of our NATO allies.
No, but, I remember those reports and asking you, hey, have you talked to some Italian guys? Have you talked to you go, haven't seen any.
Well, I do remember the French now.
Right.
They were running around their spandex shorts. I am not exaggerating. That's the God's truth.
I swear
my children's lives, Randy.
The French are in their spandex shorts.
They were, yeah. When I was in Jalalabad.
In Afghanistan.
In Afghanistan. Yeah, they were, I don't know what they did. They were always walking around. I think they were French SF guys. And
were they on bikes?
No. They'd be walking around. Spandex shorts, strutting around. I wasn't quite sure what that was all about, but
yeah.
I was like, maybe you had to dress and get outside the wire and do something.
Yeah,
right.
Not exactly prepared for an attack.
Yeah, you look at Italy, for example, Randy. They have about 2,500 troops.
Yeah.
2,500 troops in Afghanistan.
Based on what, 30,000? From the American side?
Well, you know what? Let's
think. Or maybe more than that. Well, 60,000 total.
I don't want to slam our NATO allies, but Italy, they're not exactly known for, nor are the French for their superior military forces.
So, right. Yeah.
And certainly commitment is. It's a token presence, in other words.
At least you didn't slam the NATO allies.
Our troops are bearing the brunt of everything that's happening in Afghanistan, just like they have. They're shouldering the burden. NATO is supposed to be a partnership, and it should be a fair and equal partnership. And what I don't get is, the terrorists, the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, it's just not the United States who they hate.
And I loved what Petraeus said. He says, as for any additional contribution from other NATO countries, he says, if you can ask the question in Brussels, we'd be very grateful to you. I mean, the guy, he's pretty direct.
He is.
And I love this part. This is my favorite part of the whole story when they were talking about some U.S. political and military leaders have considered negotiations with elements of the Taliban,
right,
as the insurgency gains sway in large areas of Afghanistan. Petraeus appeared to distance himself from that possibility. He told his audience, without elaborating, that he has not said he would negotiate with the Taliban. He said, I love this, you got to separate the irreconcilables from the reconcilables among the insurgents. And he says, if they're truly irreconcilable, then they must be killed, captured, or run out of the country. But the others, if you do it right, can be embraced, can be made part of the solution instead of a continuing part of the problem. And that means, though, sometimes sitting down across from a negotiating table with people who may have your blood on their hands.
Right. And, he's talking about essentially what they did in Iraq.
Right. And exactly what Colonel Buckner was talking about today with the Sons of Iraq and some of those people that have been brought in and made part of the solution.
That's right. There are a lot of factions killing each other in Iraq, who are attacking American service people. But they came under the fold, you know. And hopefully that can happen in Afghanistan.
Does Petraeus not have his hand on the pulse? I mean, he's just...
Smart guy. He really said it.
Really is a smart guy. He is. Just, you know, thank God he's in charge.
Yeah.
Oh,
and we still got to get that in, get down to CENTCOM and interview him.
Oh, I'd
love for us to be able to spend like a day with him.
Would that be great? Just going through the day and finding out what, That'd be fantastic. Well, now this is the special Army edition of the National Defense that you're listening to. We do it once a month, and it's the Voices of Strength, an hour with America's Army, and you know, everything applies to the Army. Certainly, the VA has a lot to do with what's going on. And what do you think about this appointment now? You know, Obama has made a lot of appointments. Shinseki is going to head the VA. Boy, how would you like to step into that mess? First of all,
well, that's the thing. You know, I've got kind of a wait and see attitude about it.
I do like what's being said. You know, Obama says we don't just need to better serve veterans of today's wars. We also need to build a 21st century VA that will better serve all who have answered the nation's call. It's great. That kind of stuff you love to hear.
Right. Listen, no doubt Shinseki's a smart guy. He's got guts, obviously. Put his career on the line.
Yeah.
And
said we needed more troops than Rumsfeld.
Long before anybody else did, he told them, look, we're not doing this the right way. If you go in there without X amount of troops, this is what's going to happen. He called it.
Yep.
And what happened to him? Rumsfeld fired him. So he's got guts.
Oh, no, he resigned, Jerry.
Yeah, well, okay. Rumsfeld resigned him.
Yeah, they were exactly.
But he has courage. He has integrity. He was more worried about the Army and the people serving in it than his own career. He didn't play CYA. Like I said, he put it out there, and he paid the price. Running the VA, second largest agency in the federal government. It's complex. It's a mess. There's a lot of problems. There's a lot of good things, but there's a lot of problems. It's going to be different than running the Army. Because Army, you have a chain of command. You have discipline. You got a lot of bureaucrats.
The programs are in place. It's just that nobody's looking at them.
Yeah, so... He's a smart guy. He has integrity. He'll try and do the right thing. And he's going to have his hands full.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see if it was a good choice.
Well, and it seems like everybody's kind of taking that same stand. John Rowan, the president of the Vietnam Veterans of America, said, it's an interesting choice.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it just makes, well, I mean, can you say anything a little more benign than that? Yeah, it's interesting.
Well, the thing is, the Army's a big organization.
Yeah.
There's a lot of layers there, and he ran the Army, but again, it's a different animal. So he'll do his best. That's one thing we can be assured of. He'll do his best.
Hey, we're going to wrap things up. We'll be right back here on the National Defense.
This is the National Defense.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The Veterans of Foreign Wars believes in active allegiance to flag and country. Through legislative activism and service to our military forces, veterans, their families, and communities, freedom starts at home. Pledge your allegiance again. If you're a veteran and served overseas, you may be eligible to become a member of the nation's elite veterans organization, the Veterans of Foreign Wars.
You've served your country. Now you can help your country serve others. Call 1-888-JOIN-VFW. That's 1-888-JOIN-VFW.
What do you want from the Wizard of Oz? Just messing with you. But seriously, people don't want to stand in front of my big, awesome wizard head and hear me going, duh. They want answers. That's why I go to USA.gov, the official source for government info. It gives me the smarts to go with the show. Say someone asks for a brain. I go to USA.gov, type in student loans, and 4 years later, they're chock full of knowledge. Is the Wicked Witch terrorizing your neighborhood? Well, move. Then search USA.gov for change of address form so your friends can find you and the witch can't. How about if you're stuck here from Kansas and want to go home? Well, check out USA.gov for the latest travel restrictions and passport applications. I even use it for myself. Bought my sweet ride at a government auction I found on USA.gov. I call it the Wizmobile. Balloons are for squares.
For federal and state government information, there's no place like USA.gov.
Welcome back to National Defense. Randy Miller along with Jerry Newberry, and the Special Army Edition is in the can for another week. It's always great to talk about what the Army is doing, and the Special Edition once a month that we do Voices of Strength an hour with America's Army. And if you go to the U.S. Army website, we're on the front page right there. You can also check us out at thenationaldefense.com. Listen to the show, listen to past shows, and send us an email. And thanks to everybody that came on the show. Colonel Buckner, thank you so much, from Iraq. And thank you to everybody who's doing stuff for the troops for the holiday season.
For the holidays.
Just really great to see.
You know, even after the holidays are over,
I know,
keep it up.
Absolutely. It'd be nice to space out all of those.
Right.
You know, you see everything happening in the month of December. It'd be nice to space those out. But thank you so much to everybody who's doing some great things for the troops. And they really are. I mean, every day that you look at a paper, you check out the internet, and you see people just by themselves.
Right. And speaking of that, so many VFW people out there.
Yeah.
Doing so much. After the holidays, we're going to start lining up.
Post of the week, featuring some of these great VFW posts around the country and what they're doing, not only in the community, but around the world.
Around the world, and it's just not during the holidays. It's throughout the
year. Right. Yeah. Yeah, you think about what people are doing now, times 365.
Right.
You know, and that's
right.
The kind of things they're doing. So, anyway, we'll let you know about that. Thank you so much for being here. And once again, check us out at thenationaldefense.com. Let us know what you're talking about, what you're doing, and if you want any kind of special issues addressed in the program, we'll be glad to do that. And we'll see you back next week right here on The National Defense.
I never thought that this is where I'd settle down. Thought I'd die an old man back in my hometown. They gave me this plot of land, me and some other men, for a job well done. There's a big white house, sits on a hill just up the road. The man inside, he cried the day they brought me home. They folded up a flag, told my mom and dad, we're proud of your son. And I'm proud to be on this peaceful piece of property. I'm on sacred ground and I'm in the best company. I'm thankful for those, thankful for the things I've done. I can rest in peace. I'm one of the chosen ones.